All right, so tonight is Sunday night, Experience the Big Book. And we are, when working with others, and we may finish the chapter tonight. It depends how much I talk. We may not, but we've really covered some great stuff. And we'll be actually then done with the main part of the book dealing with the steps. And then I'm going to do a meeting on the principles in the lost chapters, and then we're going to do Dr. Bob's story, which I haven't covered before, and we're going to do two other stories in the big book that I haven't covered before: Keys to the Kingdom and Dr. Alcoholic Addict, because they're really special to me. And so we'll be doing that, and then we'll do a vision for you, and then we'll start over again. And the other thing we're going to do is, in the steps we took, if you have your book, if you have it, I'll get copies of it. We're going to do the step 12 in that steps we took after we finish this chapter. And that's really powerful stuff by Joe McHugh on carrying the message. What is the message? What are the principles? It's really a really good chapter. For those who don't know, he was the Joe of the Joe and Charlie, and he was a brilliant man. And he makes the program very simple and very easy to understand. So we've been doing that. He has two books. We've been doing that intertwined for the 10 years that I've been doing the meeting to add something to the big book. Tonight we are on page 99. And just a couple other announcements. On Wednesday night, we have started the big book again, and we are going to start on Doctor's Opinion. We covered the foreword to the second edition, the history of AA, and we'll be starting on Doctor's Opinion. So that's neat. It's always... And then on Saturday, we started step 3 last week, and we covered the four paragraphs that tell us what's wrong with us. And I'm going to title it, God Save Me From Me, - Fire Yourself. And I was thinking about that. We talk a lot about self-centeredness. Anybody heard that at the meeting? But my real problem is self-sufficiency. And I need God's sufficiency. God's sufficient for everything I need. And I can't be self-sufficient, which is when you're self-centered. And so we're going to be looking at that on page 100 tonight. And we heard from Jen about the miracles in her home life today. And we're going to be covering the final principles tonight on how you intertwine your new recovery with the people that you love and you're living with. So we're going to start on 99. It says, I'm going to start on this, the first full paragraph. They talk about how if you're back with the family, and it says, after they have seen tangible results from what you're doing, the family will perhaps want to go along. And these things will come to pass naturally and in good time, provided, however, the alcoholic continues to demonstrate that he be sober, considerate, and helpful, regardless of what anyone says or does. In other words, that's how we're supposed to be. Sober is very good. It's a good idea.
Yes.
And considerate, that means consideration is one of the main spiritual principles of this program, because it means we're tolerant, we're accepting, we're not judging and critical of others. We accept them as they are. And helpful, of course, service is the other main principle of our spiritual life. Of course, we all fall much below the standard many times, but we must try to repair the damage immediately, lest we pay the penalty by a spree. Now, why would we have a spree? Because if we stay angry or we stay in conflict with people, we don't feel good. And when alcoholics don't feel good, they tend to seek a solution to that. And it's usually alcohol or drugs. and that it doesn't work, by the way. And so we don't want to keep anything unrepaired. So how do you know how to do that? Well, that's why you have a sponsor when you're new in recovery. And then you make amends right away, remember, step 10. If they're, and the penalty, I write anger or unresolved conflict is fatal. And we're going to be reading that on Saturday when we get to step 4. Remember, resentments are fatal. Anger is fatal for an alcoholic. And I think Gary sent me that Oswald Chambers today, and he talked about that, didn't he? That anger is fatal. It separates us from God. If there be divorce or separation, there should be no undue haste for the couple to get together. The man should be sure of his recovery. Now, how can you be sure of your recovery? You know, it's a continuous process. Well, you know you're doing the deal. You're doing it every day. You're working the steps. You're doing prayer and meditation. You're living steps 10 and 11. The wife should fully understand his new way of life before you reconnect. If their old relationship is to be resumed, it must be on a better basis. So what was the former basis? Conflict, right? Conflict. Each person having their own ideas about how things should be. And so both have to be responsible for changing. And I wrote, yeah, the basis has to be dependence on God. That's what this whole book is about. Dependence on God, not on us or others. And after we're dependent on God, he gives us a direction on how we deal with our, with other people and ourselves. And I wrote, both have to be willing to change. It's not like I was right, you better come around. Both have to change. Because remember, we're all spiritually ill, right? And so we all need to do this. Everybody needs to work the 12 steps. I just wish we could get this message to the world.
Yes.
This means a new attitude and spirit all around. So what was our old attitude? Well, we had our old ideas, right? And we had our old ways. And our other attitude was that we were in charge and we were running the world and we're going to have a new spirit. And the former spirit was dead, right? It wasn't alive. We had the spirit in us, but we didn't use the power. So we're going to have a relationship with God. Sometimes it is to be the best interest of all concerned that a couple remain apart. Obviously, no rule can be laid down. But let the alcoholic continue his program day by day. Now, that doesn't mean that he goes to a lot of meetings. Program in this chapter, in this book, is the steps. We read it tonight. It says, we suggest this program of recovery, the 12 steps, it's a program. It's not a suggestion. It's suggested that if you can't find a way out of your situation, that you may want to do this program. Now, the program does involve being in the fellowship. I'm not saying it doesn't, but it means working the steps. When the time for living together has come, it will be apparent to both parties. I wrote, leave it to God. Now, that's hard for us. Right, we always have a time frame on when we want everything to be done, and it's usually not the best. And we're going to read on the next paragraph why, in the next page. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless, and then he says he has his family back. But I've heard a lot of unlesses, right? Mm-hmm. I can't go to, where's Brian? He's not here tonight. I can't go to 3 meetings a week. I'm dying of alcoholism. My life's unmanageable, but I'm so busy. Right, I can't recover unless I get a new car or unless the job. You know, we put a lot of conditions on it. Once you do that, then you're not defeated, because if you're truly defeated, you're not going to have any conditions. You're willing to go to any length. It says this just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect—that's what they call us, the new person—that his recovery is not dependent upon people. Is that a good thing? Because if it's dependent upon people, you're screwed, because you can't change them. And then they become your higher power. Has any alcoholic in this room ever been dependent upon somebody emotionally? How'd that work out? It's a mess. Right, Jimmy? Yeah, it's a mess. And in fact, that is our problem, because we have codependencies. Bill W. wrote that the goal of AA is not to be physically sober, it's to be emotionally sober. And to be emotionally sober, we have to deal with these abnormal codependencies we've had all of our lives. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And it says it's dependent upon his relationship with God. I like listening to this minister. He's teaching me the Bible. He always repeats key phrases. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. There's nothing else you could say about that. It's the whole deal. As soon as I put my life dependent on anything but God, then that's a form of worship of something else, right? And then that's called like blasphemy in the scriptures, and it's idol worship, and it separates you from God, and it's the worst sin. And so the worst sin I could do is to depend on something beside God. And everybody does it. Every human being does it because they're always thinking about themselves. Sometime during the day, every human being, that's our nature. And when we're thinking about ourselves and what we want or not, we're committing idol worship because we're worshiping me. And it's hard to see, but that's what happens. And once we do that, then we're separated from the big guy, and then we're in trouble. We have seen men get well whose families have not returned at all. We have seen others slip when the family came back too soon. Now here's one of my favorite paragraphs. Somebody needs to keep track of all my favorite paragraphs. I think it's in the hundreds, but this is my favorite paragraph tonight, till we get to the next one. But I quote this a lot, and I've got this fairly memorized because I've done this meeting so many, but whenever I'm down a little bit and I'm getting back into Michael or some little form of thinking that things aren't great in some area of my life, I just go right back to this. It says, both you and the new man must walk day by day. That's what we're supposed to do. We tend to put sponsorship on a horizontal, the vertical plane, the sponsor's here, the sponsor's here, but we're really horizontal. We all have the same. And if you have a sponsor and they're putting you like this, you might want to change and get somebody like this, because we're all the same. And so we're sharing our experience, strength, and hope from a position of equality and humility. And it says, walk day by day. It doesn't say walk one day and then you're done, right? It doesn't say walk 90 days together, right? It says walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. Now, how do you know when the spiritual, the path ends? Well, what is the sign that the path ends for you? You're not breathing. You're dead. It never ends, right? It never ends. It's continuous. And in fact, you can go back on the path if you stop doing it, right? And so you want to walk in the progress spiritually. That means you're growing in the knowledge and the of your Creator. And if you persist, so you have to persist in this. You can't do it well for like 3 months and then, you know, you've got it down. You know, I hear it all the time. You know, I don't need to go to 3 meetings. You know, I don't need to do this. I'm doing great. Once you hear that from an alcoholic, you know they're in trouble. Because why? They're deciding what they need. And in fact, I hear a lot of people tell me really screwy ideas. You know, I work with people and they come up with these ideas. And I said, well, who told you that one? I mean, where'd you get that one from? And it's usually from, and then you see, I'm lucky because I have a wife at home and she'll do that to me. I have some idea. She says, well, where did you get that one from? I said, you may want to rethink that. So it's we all do it. But we need somebody to help remind us that we don't want to get into that thinking and think it's true. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. We heard today, 60 days, remarkable things, 6 months. It starts happening very quickly if you do the work intensely. Now, here's the line I like. When I look back, I realize that the things which came to me when I put myself in God's hands were better than anything I could have planned. Wow.
That's good.
It's true.
Yes.
It's true. I'll sit in my chair and I'm stewing about some nonsense thing, not much, but I can do it. And then I'll say, well, gee, I shouldn't be alive. I shouldn't be in this wonderful house. I shouldn't have this nice wife. I shouldn't have my house. It gets you into gratitude. And it realizes, and it makes you humble, like Gary and I talked about. Humble, look what's happened. And it's better than anything I could have planned. If you came in here on July 4th, if you'd written out everything you wanted, or Margaret, if you'd written out 6 months ago, if I'd written everything I wanted years ago when I surrendered, I would have sold myself short. In fact, I didn't even know what I needed. What I needed turned out to be not what I needed. And the things that have happened to me, I can't even begin to. I just remember when I closed the car door and I went into that treatment center, and the car was just a mess, and my life was a mess. Who could have thought? But what I did say, I said, God, I don't know what to do, but I'm just going to ride on your back, and let's go. And then look how my life's changed years later. Also, has anybody ever had a problem in sobriety? Like a problem where there? Has anybody had a situation?
Yes.
And then, of course, we're alcoholics, so we have a plan for that situation. Has anybody ever done that? Mm-hmm. Plan the situation, usually out of fear, right? We're afraid, so we've got a plan. And then the situation works out in ways you never would have thought. And you say, wow, how'd that happen? We wasted all the time on that fear and worry. Anybody ever do that? Yeah. Hours, days, years. So now I have a mantra that whenever I start getting any little fear, I tell myself it's absolutely ridiculous. It's a complete waste of time. Stop. And I do, because it's proven to me I have nothing to worry about. And he said we have nothing to fear but fear itself. And really, if we're here, we're doing the steps, we're connected to God, we have everything we need. We never have to fear anything. And follow the dictates. Now the dictates is like a dictator, follow the dictates of a higher power. So God is going to dictate to me. Now, how will I know what God's dictating to me? I have to learn to listen to God, right? And I have to learn how to meditate and to pray and to seek God. Are you guys okay over there? All right. Because you're missing the most important point here. Stop it. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world. Now, how do you know what the dictates are? We have to seek God all the time, right? Now, the thing that helps me the most, and it's that line that John likes, when agitated or doubtful, I need to pause. I wrote a whole thought on it. To me, it's the serenity prayer and the spiritual axiom in the big book. I have to pause, because if I pause, then I allow God to come in and tell me what's the right thought or action. It's a simple thing, because pause means that I don't know what to do here, and I'm disturbed, and I don't want to do any action. And it always works. It's probably the most powerful spiritual thing. We had John yesterday said that pausing is really how we allow God to work in our lives. Now, here's a line that makes a lot of sense, and it has a lot of meaning. And if you read it just quickly, you may not see it. You will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. So that's great. World's going to be great, right?
Yes.
But what it really says is that if I'm with God, the world's always going to be wonderful, no matter what's happening. Now, we always wanted circumstances to be good, to feel good, right? Isn't that true?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But now I can feel good no matter the circumstances. I can live in a wonderful world all the time. Now, when is the world not wonderful? When I decide it isn't. And when I decide that the circumstances are bad. And then I'm back in me. So does anybody else do that? But it can always be wonderful with God. It's a great promise. All I have to do is stay close to God. Now, this is the follow-up on the contract with God that we signed on page 63. Did anybody do a contract with God write out a contract with God. On page 63, it says, if I make, and to the top of the page, if I make God God and I'm not God anymore, and he's going to be my director, right? And I'm going to be the actor and he's the director. It says, I have a new, remarkable things are going to happen. I have a new employer, so I work for God now. So I have a contract with God, I work for him, and then here's what he does. He's going to provide everything I need. Anybody else got a better contract? And it doesn't even cost anything. There's no interest rate. You don't have to borrow anything. You just, God is your employer, and he'll give you everything you need spiritually to handle anything that happens. And all I have to do is stay close to him and perform his work well. Isn't that a great deal? Now, they left something out of the big book. I'm going to put it in next time I rewrite it. But we also give God in that contract worry. Worry is God's job. When I'm worrying, I'm doing God's job because I have nothing to worry about. So if I follow the dictates of a higher power, I live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances, no matter what happens in my life today, I have a power to help me deal with it. Doesn't mean that bad things aren't going to happen, that we things that we don't like, but we'll learn how to deal with them. And I still talk about it a lot. When my son died, I saw that line in the big book from page, because I quote it wrong a lot, because I'm old. I said, it says, just to the extent that I do as I think he would have me and humbly rely on him, can I match calamity with serenity? I saw that line. I was in the basement. I had the phone. They told me he died. I could see that line. Who put that line in my head? That was God. It's page 68. It says, the second paragraph, to the extent that I do as I think you would have me and humbly rely on him, I can match calamity with serenity. It's the greatest promise in the big book. And it's absolutely true. He'll give me anything I need to handle any situation. And so we're never alone anymore. A lot of us felt alone a lot of our lives, didn't we? Mm-hmm. But we're not alone now. We have God. I'm not going to finish the chapter tonight, so don't worry. When working with a man and his family, you should take care not to participate in their quarrels. Good idea. I wrote, stay out of the drama. Now, I guarantee if you sponsor people, you get involved in their drama. And we have a 3-day rule in my house that if I'm involved in somebody's drama for more than 3 days, my wife says, cut them loose. You can't handle it. It's not good for you. We don't want to get involved in other people's drama. And we don't want to take sides. So the other thing is, like, we have a lot of difficult relationships when we come in here. And so we'll want to tell our side of the story to get other people to tell us that our side's good and they're bad. I don't think that's good. I think they should tell us, you know, there are two sides to every situation, and you didn't get here overnight, and we need to look and we need to do the page 66 and 67. We're all spiritually ill. We all need to be treated with love and patience, kindness and tolerance. We can't be angry at anybody. We don't have to be right. And we want a kind and tolerant view of everybody. It says, but urge upon a man's family that he has been a very sick person, should be treated accordingly. And we have to remember that. We were very sick when we came in here. And you should warn against arousing resentment or jealousy. Now, you can warn against it, but it's easy to arouse resentment in people who aren't spiritually well, right? Now, why do we get resentment? Because we're centered on us and what we want. And then if people don't do what we want, we get angry at them. So it's very hard in the beginning to have positive relationships because of all the problems that both people have. And it said you should point out that his defects of character are not going to disappear overnight. Well, I got news for you. They're not going to disappear ever. You got them. But you don't have to act on them anymore. See, we have this card now. And if you're disturbed, get the card. You're over here. You don't even have to look at it. You're over here. You're back itself. And how do you get out of that? You say, God, I don't want to practice these defects anymore. I want to change. I don't want to be this person. Help me be the opposite. Go over here. I told the story how the nurses all had cards, and I had one on my desk. And when I was, getting worked up about something, they say, now, That is not always a happy thing to have pointed out to you when you're in a really good resentment, you know. But you see, and now, you know, now I don't really, I don't try not to stay over here. We all get over here. Anybody says they're not, well, you're either in a coma or brain dead. But you get here, but you don't want to stay here. And that's the power of the program. We don't get to be, we may have progress, not perfection. We never get perfect. We still always got this crap. But we don't have to live this. We have freedom now with God. And I think I'll just finish this paragraph and then we'll open it up. Show them that he's entered a period of growth. That's what we want. And I wrote, it never ends. Ask them to remember when they are impatient, the blessed fact of his sobriety. So that's called gratitude. Be happy for what you have. And then that goes back to that line that when we put ourselves in God's hands, it's better than anything we could have planned. I think I'm going to stop there and we'll finish the chapter next week so we can congratulate the birthdays and share. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Mike.